I'm an economist. I think that Sweden would be much better if we could push through a big tax reform, because taxes are part of the problems we have discussed. Sweden has very high tax on labor, but the tax on capital is surprisingly low and differentiated in a way which is strange to an economist. Stockholm is a state of minds. Hey, Stockholm is a state of minds. Yeah, we break it down like this and like that. Welcome to the podcast. Stockholm is where it's at. Let's go.
Welcome to Stockholm is a State of Minds, the only podcast you need to become Swedish. I'm Maria Fogelström.
And I'm Philip Rohr. And we're the host of this podcast, created for international people like you who have moved to Sweden, so you can learn more about your new home country and make you feel more welcomed.
Today, we're taking a dive into something that affects us all, the economy. Economy is something that affects everyone every day in some way. Your whole life is based on economy, for better or for worse. It's a complex system of human interaction, a giant social game where we cooperate and compete to meet our needs and wants. Philosophically, it's about how societies answer fundamental questions such as what to produce, how to produce, and who gets what. The economy is all about these big choices that societies make, and these choices are shaped by values. The way we structure our economy reflects what we prioritize as a society. To learn more about the Swedish economy, we have invited a prominent Swedish economist and author, Claes Eklund. Welcome, Claes.
Thank you.
Welcome, Claes. You have quite the distinguished career across academia, government, finance. It would be great if you could give a brief introduction to our listeners.
Well, I studied at the Stockholm School of Economics, and my dissertation was about the long-term growth and development of the Swedish economy. And then I worked for about a decade in the government offices, Minister of Finance and the Cabinet Office. After that, chief economist of SEB, which is one of the largest Swedish banks. And then for a while at Mannheim Swartling, which is the biggest law firm in the Nordic area. And at present, I am at something called Dahlgren Capital, which is a small venture cap firm. So I've seen sort of many places, many hats I've worn.
And majority of our listeners are international people who have left their home country to start a new life in Sweden. And we think that they would like to learn more about Sweden and also about Swedish people's relation to money. Could you outline a brief picture of Swedish modern economic history? I know it's difficult, but still.
Well, the briefer the better. I think you will have to start then with what was called the Swedish model, the cooperation between big government, big unions, and big corporates. And that model worked quite well for many decades after the Second World War. Sweden was unhurt by the war, and we could profit from the rebuilding of Europe. But in the late 80s and early 90s, strains appeared. We had borrowed too much, inflation was too high. And when the government and the central bank finally decided to quash inflation, the result was a deep homemade economic crisis in the early 90s. I think that is important for foreigners to understand, that this was a traumatic experience for Swedes. You know, until then, we thought we were God's own chosen people, at least economically and morally.
Maybe we still think.
Some of us still think. But I think that that thought, that ideal vision of Sweden was actually hurt by the crisis in the early 90s when unemployment quadrupled. There was a banking crisis, a currency crisis, and we had to change the economic governance of the country. And since then, Sweden has become much more mainstream, more market economy, taxes not as high as they were, so on and so forth. And this turnaround made, I'd say it was quite successful in the 90s and early noughties, rapid growth, inflation came down, et cetera, et cetera. But lately, we've been sort of a bit sluggish. We didn't manage the years after the financial crisis in 2008. Very well. So we're sort of in the middle of the pack these days. And I think, as you hinted, some Swedes have a difficulty realizing this. Many Swedes still sort of hope that we are the superpower of the world, morally and economically, but we're not.
What indicators are you thinking about when you say sort of middle of the pack globally?
Well, GDP per capita is the sort of traditional measurement of where you are. And we used to be, you know, top notch in the world after the Second World War. And now we're on, in the OECD area, I think we're number, I don't recall exactly, 10 or 11. It's not bad at all, but it's not top notch anymore. So when it comes to the old sort of sacred grail of equality, inequality measured in different ways have increased in the recent decade or so. Capital income has increased for the wealthy part of the population while wages have been sluggish. And Sweden is no longer the most equal country in the world when it comes to income and fortunes. We are also there sort of middle of the pack.
What do you think? Sweden became a member of the European Union in 1995. What did that mean for the economy?
Well, it has meant economically that we are having closer ties with Europe.
Yeah.
We're not a member of the euro. We still have the krona. So we're still an outlier in some sense. But we are no longer the outlier when it comes to neutrality and, you know, no formal ties to other countries. We are a member of the European Union. We are now also members of NATO.
Yeah.
Also in that respect, we are sort of in the middle of the pack. We are an ordinary European country.
Finally.
Some would say finally, others would sort of feel sorry about it.
Yes.
Klaus, you talk a little bit about the economic history, but how would you sort of describe household finance within Sweden?
Swedish households are indebted much more than other European households, which is interesting. It's a mirror image of the state, which has hardly any debt at all.
Mm-hmm.
The opposite is the most common in Europe, where states indebted and households are wealthy.
Yeah.
But here, households are indebted. The reason they are indebted is that we have, to a large extent, we own our own homes, and we have borrowed, taken mortgages to pay for those homes. And interest rates have been very low in Sweden, even lower than in Europe as a whole in the decade that passed before the pandemic. So the government has, in a sense, encouraged households to borrow to buy their own homes. So we are wealthy in the sense that most of us own our own homes, but we are indebted financially.
Yeah. It's a difficult situation for many international people who comes here. It could be difficult to find housing. But also many people who have made a conscious choice to come here to live and continue their lives here, they will have to buy a house or an apartment. That's a complicated situation.
Houses are costly here for several reasons. First of all, like I said previously, the interest rates were low for a long time, and of course that pushed up prices. And secondly, there's a sort of physical lack of housing in many places, in particular in Stockholm. And that's because of zoning laws, it's because of rent control. I mean, there are a number of things, bureaucracy in the administration. And there's a lot of discussion among economists whether Sweden should modernize the rental market, for instance. With the rent control that we have today, it's almost impossible to get hold of a sort of, well, cheap or rather cheap apartment in the city.
Like social
so there
housing.
Are a number of problems with the Swedish housing market. The international organizations who sort of evaluate the Swedish economy, like the IMF, the EU, the OECD, they all say the same things. Sweden has a structural housing problem, which probably will take a long time to solve. And right now there are no indications that it will be solved. And that's, of course, because vested interests are dead against most changes.
Yeah. I think when you come as a international here also, I mean, since it's so expensive, it's also undermining some kind of integration because you need to have very much money to buy something in the city, in the center of Stockholm, for example. So this, I mean, the differences increase even more.
The housing market has become more segregated, where we have some of the suburbs are quite wealthy, but other are quite poor, to be honest, with poor housing, poor schools, children who will become destitute. And of course, this is another huge problem where Sweden has changed in the past 20 years or so, which also changes the sort of self-esteem of Swedes. Also here, we're, well, in the middle of the pack. We're not outstanding when it comes to welfare anymore.
No.
There are large chunks of the population who have problems. And to a large extent, those are the newly arrivals from countries in Asia or Africa, in the Middle East.
Mm.
I sound very pessimistic here. That's not my intention. But I think if you look at recent sort of opinion polls, there is a very large portion of the Swedish population who feels that the country is moving in the wrong direction. And I think that's partly because of some of the reasons I've just discussed, segregation, with crime coming, housing problems, the feeling that Sweden is not anymore at top of the pops, that we are experiencing similar problems that many other countries.
Yeah.
And maybe that's not strange, because we were an outlier with our living in our happy little bubble of the Swedish model a generation ago.
How would you say, sort of, you've listed some challenges in Sweden, with how would you see economics or economic policy playing a role in addressing those challenges? And where do you think there are sort of other factors or other levers that we need to...
Well, there are a number of structural issues and challenges. One is obviously immigration, where the Swedish sort of system for accepting and integrating immigrants has not been good enough. That's why a large portion of the people coming here have difficulties coming into the labor market and housing market. Another problem or challenge is what we already discussed, housing, which is a structural problem which will take many years to solve. I think economic policy has a very important task in trying to solve both these issues, but it involves complex sort of wholesale solutions which are very difficult to get pushed through in a situation when Parliament is so fragmented as it is today, with eight different parties all having their own sort of their own agenda. I, for one, I'm an economist. I think that Sweden would be much better if we could push through a big tax reform, because taxes are part of the problems we have discussed. Sweden has very high tax on labor, but the tax on capital is surprisingly low and differentiated in a way which is strange to an economist. For instance, the property tax is regressive, meaning that there's a nominal ceiling on the property tax you pay, meaning, once again, that it is very profitable. You get tax subsidies, in essence, for buying a big, expensive house with borrowed money.
Yes.
And I don't think anybody actually wanted this to happen, but it's a situation, it's the result of a number of decisions taken by different governments over many years, and suddenly we're here.
And also, things in society change, and the system didn't follow, so...
Yeah. So there are a number of once again, the EU, the OECD, the IMF are saying all the same things. Sweden needs a housing reform, Sweden needs a tax reform, etc. But it's difficult to obtain or attain all these things in a parliament which is as fragmented as it is today.
I think I've been living abroad for many years myself, and every time when I came back to Sweden, and still today when I'm here, I think that Swedes are very, not superficial, but they're very capitalistic in a way. they talk about, everything is about money, more or less. So I think this relation, how Swedes do relate to money if you compare to other.
But isn't that pretty common in most countries today?
The market economy
dominates. Your success in life is measured by how much money you make. Social media rewards those who can buy flashy stuff, who live in a nice house, etc., etc. But it's true. It's possible that it's more noticeable in Sweden if you go back once again and compare to the old Swedish model, where, you know, the words that were used was solidarity and equality, and the income differentials were smaller than today. So the change is probably more noticeable here than in other places.
That's probably what I meant.
It's interesting you say that, Maria, because growing up in the U.S., I would say, and I actually just returned from a trip there, and it's quite interesting to field questions about Sweden. And I would say at least a view from an American perspective in certain parts of the country, is that it's not capitalistic or free market. Often it's, how are you doing in that socialist country? And so it takes time to actually start to describe the Swedish model. And so I don't know, how do you tend to respond to those types of comments?
I would say two things. First of all, that Sweden has changed and it become much more of a market economy than it used to be. But secondly, compared to the US, of course, it is a country where the government, the state, the public sector is much more important, meaning that people pay high taxes, but they also get better protection. My sons both are American citizens, live in the US. I've traveled a lot in the US. And I know, for instance, how expensive it is with medical insurance and all that stuff in the U.S. Here we get that through the tax system. So it's two different ways to solve the same problems. And honestly, I think in many ways, I'm still a good old Swede. So I prefer, in a sense, the Swedish system here, yes, even though I'm a wretched economist and pro-market economy. I think the combination of a strong state which actually can, in a sense, liberate citizens, believe it or not, is pretty good. I mean, you pay taxes, but the taxes, if used wisely, means that people have more choice, in a sense. For instance, women in Sweden have a better position than women in many other countries because we have parental leave, we have parental insurance, we have free hospital care, you know, all that stuff. I think that is a pretty decent solution to many of our challenges as human beings.
I think many Swedes don't understand how good this system is.
True.
In the long end.
But still, despite all the challenges and problems, I recently saw a study, World Happiness Report.
Yes.
And it actually claimed that Sweden was among the five best countries, or the happiest countries in the world, together with the other Nordic countries,
yes,
I should say. So this kind of the Nordic model with market economy and a strong social welfare state seems to make people pretty well off and in a good mood.
We shouldn't complain.
No.
I think we don't really understand how good situation we have, like parental leave and parental insurance specifically, I think. Mm-hmm. We sometimes, or quite often, with the people we meet from other countries, talk about Swedish mentality. And in Sweden, we have some subjects who are more or less taboo. You can't talk about them. Like, you don't ask anyone about their salary or how much your apartment cost.
But the latter is wrong. I think with a marketization, let's call it that, of housing, it's quite a common discussion these days.
Yeah, but you don't ask it straight out. That's what was my point. What you do, I think...
How many kvadratmeter in which neighborhood do you live in, maybe? And then someone calculates the...
But it's a question of how much money do you owe? How heavily indebted are you? How do you suffer from interest rates? I mean, that's a topical discussion these days.
Yeah, I mean that we talk about it, but we, like, since historical times, we quantify things rather than talking about being really straightforward. So we can ask, like, how we quantify things and, like, where do you live and how big is your apartment? Then we know, we can look up in different websites exactly where you live, exactly how much probably you paid for it, So do you think this is in the Swedes' DNA that we systematically avoid these kind of sensitive subjects? We're not straightforward about it.
I think also here things are changing. You're definitely right. This is what it was like when I was young, many years ago. The old Swedish model, solidarity, everybody was sort of happy with what he or she had, and you didn't really talk about money in that sense. But it is gradually changing. Sweden has become much more of a market economy, and many people are valued by their income and where they live. So it's become a less problematic issue to discuss. I would say so.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You're talking about this idea of indebtedness and also the sort of the role of the state. I think I have to watch almost every podcast. I feel like I bring up Lars Tregård, the historian who's coined the phrase status individualism. Mm-hmm. And sort of this idea of indebtedness to... I guess through mortgages. Can you talk a little bit about why you think in Sweden it's quite common to be highly indebted to, I don't want to say the state, but through your mortgage, but then sort of this attempting to not be in debt towards neighbors, friends, sort of this idea of mutual independence. Why do you think that's the case?
Strong historical roots, but also that is changing. And the indebtedness is not to the state. Mm. You're indebted to the bank.
Right.
Yeah.
And the mortgage institution. Of course, those have, in some cases, government protection, but that's something we don't really think about.
Yeah.
So I think the dependence on the state has diminished.
Mm.
The all-encompassing government social insurance system has been frayed at the edges, and now some people take private insurances instead, mm. health insurance, depending on where you work and what employer you have. So that system is gradually sort of changing as well.
Yeah. Reading a little bit about what you've worked with, the term futurist has come up quite a bit. Do you consider yourself a futurist?
Yeah. I don't really know what that word means, but I've been head of a number of commissions and participated in other commissions who have been given the task of sort of looking into the future,
yeah.
the future of the labor market, the future of, well, the economy as a whole, whatever. So this is something I've thought a lot about, meaning I think about globalization, international challenges, segregation, housing, yeah. et cetera, but I don't think that's because I'm especially well-equipped or a futurist. Just because I've been into this game for quite a long time, I've seen a lot of things, and I don't want to sound stupid, perhaps, but I'm a pretty broad economist. I've worked with fiscal policy, monetary policy. I worked with growth issues. I worked with climate. I worked with the labor market, et cetera, et cetera. So that's perhaps why the government or other institutions have entrusted me with sort of thinking about the future, at least.
Yeah. So then thinking about the future, embedded in that is the idea of hope. If you can imagine a future, you have some sort of hope. So sort of two sides of the same coin. What gives you concern for the future of Sweden, and what gives you hope?
Well, basically what gives me hope is human endeavor, thinking, creativity on the one hand, and on the other, which is linked to this, technological development. I am a, let's call it, techno-optimist, in the sense that I believe that technical change is really the only thing that could stop climate change.
Mm.
And technical change is also what could hopefully solve a number of the problems we have in segregation, financing the public sector, you know, whatever. For instance, right now, we discuss, many of us fear the surge of AI might lead to unemployment. But at the same time, I, as an historically interested economist, I know that historically, actually, new technologies never caused general unemployment. It caused unemployment in certain sectors and regions for certain professions, but never actually unemployment on a large scale, because new technology means higher productivity, means higher income, and so new demand creates job in another place. And look at now Sweden, for instance. We do have an unemployment problem, but that's not a general unemployment problem. It's a problem because of segregation.
Yeah.
Unemployment is extremely high among immigrants with low education.
Mm.
That is not something which is due to technology.
No, technical development. I think that's the story behind the Sweden's success.
Absolutely.
Through time.
And look ahead, our great problem on the labor market as of now, except for the segregation, is a lack of people in healthcare, hospitals, the judicial sector, the army, whatever. Hundreds of thousands of people are lacking. And of course, AI and technological development can actually, perhaps, hopefully, help diminish that problem by making administration more efficient, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. So at bottom, or at sort of when at the bottom line, I am a techno optimist, which doesn't mean I see everything's great and dandy with all technologies. But in general, I am very much hoping that new technology can help humanity solve a number of problems.
Mm. What do you think about this new minimal salary that you need to have as a foreigner when you come here?
As an economist, I think it's an extremely strange proposal because it means that you actually push out a number of people from the labor market in a situation where we're lacking people. But we know that the argument behind this has nothing to do with economics.
No.
It is, once again, it's the government coalition, which is simply dead upon diminishing or cutting down immigration. And this is one tool they use, irrespective of the economic consequences.
Mm. At the same time as we need loads of people coming here.
Mm.
That's true. I think one fact that is true that also many international people realize when they come here is that Swedish salaries are in general lower than in other countries because we don't see our social security system as a kind of income, but it actually is. That's something we have to explain for many people. That
meaning that what you're talking about is actually salary after tax,
exactly,
which is lower than in many other countries. Yeah. And once again, in other countries, you would have to pay your own insurance systems, but you don't have in Sweden. But this is a problem. There can be a problem when you want to get expats to come to Sweden because you have to pay them a much higher salary here, both because of housing and because of taxes.
Yes.
Which is something many companies have had problems with.
Yes.
And in particular, of course, with the new sort of high-tech companies booming and all the unicorns in Sweden, there is a housing problem in Stockholm. Absolutely. If expats coming to Stockholm are to live on a standard which they're used to in their home countries, it's going to be exceedingly expensive for the employer.
True. But I think of these people, if they intend to stay here for the rest of their lives, maybe it's a good idea to organize some savings for you, for your pension or for afterwards, because since you don't earn so much money, maybe you should have a good plan for that. What would be your advice to...
Absolutely, and not only for expats, for everybody in Sweden, I would say. Because the public pension system is not sufficient since we all age and population is getting older, et cetera, et cetera. So we have to work longer and we have to save more. It's as simple as that.
So how do you do? What is the advice? Go and see a bank or...?
Oh, I'm that's too earthly for sort of the... I'm an economist up in the clouds. I try to abstain from giving private economic advice, but of course, talking to a bank is never wrong. It depends so much how long you intend to stay and what your employer pays, etc. Sorry.
Then you're not going to like this question either, because also quite practically, are there specific financial mistakes that international people can make when they move to Sweden that might be different given the system than, say, another country?
My guess is simply that it has to do with the different role of the state in Sweden and private insurance in other countries. You have to check how much your private insurances cover, how much the state actually promises you, and see what you need to cover up in between. But that's something that your employer definitely should help you with.
Mm. One thing that is quite special with Sweden too is that we have a more or less completely cashless society, which surprises many people. What do you say about that?
In some respects, Sweden is a very modern country. We've talked a lot about traditions and the Swedish model, but actually for decades, Sweden has also prided itself on being very modern. It's started in the 1920s and 30s, actually, with functionalism and Keynesianism and stuff like that. We are early adopters when it comes to fashion and technological trends. And we have all these high-tech companies in Stockholm, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm.
And the cashless society is just one offspring of all this. And the central bank has been keen on sort of helping this along. And some of the important inventions on the road have actually been Swedish. The ATM is a Swedish invention, for instance.
Is it?
Anyway, so we're moving along, and most people are quite happy with having the card, or they just blip the card, we send money over the internet and so on and so forth. I, for one, I never go to the bank. Why should I? I don't have to.
In time of crisis, if all electricity or electronic things don't work,
and that's why we need to have backup even more than previously, of course. You also, the central bank and the government have all said, have both said that we cannot be completely cashless.
Mm.
We have to accept that many many citizens want cash because they have bad experience from their home countries. And we also need sort of a pile of cash for exactly the situation you're talking about, times of crisis. But the cashless society, and once again, I think it's important to see that as one aspect of the modern Sweden.
Yeah. Mm.
Something that's quite important in the Swedish economy today is, can we coin it, call it the green economy in the sense of sort of revitalizing industry, companies like H2 Green Steel, Northvolt. Can you talk a little bit about your work within that area?
I think that's also has been going on for quite a long time. Sweden was the first country in the world to introduce a CO tax, carbon dioxide tax, in the early 90s. And it's, for a long time, I think it's been the highest in the world. Maybe it's not anymore, but it has been high. And the combination of nuclear power and the CO tax and district heating has actually made Sweden a very sort of a leading country when it comes to bringing down CO2 emissions. So there are good traditions. Now, however, also this is gradually changing, unfortunately, I would say, because of the fragmented parliament and the new government. Well, it's not that new anymore, but they have failed, in my mind, to produce a convincing plan to continue to reduce emissions. So politics is not in the driver's seat in this respect. It's business.
But it was politics.
It was politics, yes. But now it's business, clearly business.
Yeah.
Because Swedish companies in the international market have found that they are much more competitive, at least mostly, if they can show that they are greener than the competitors. Maybe this will change too, depending on what happens with fossil prices and what happens if Trump comes back and et cetera, et cetera. But as of now, it is a competitive advantage to be green. And it is also rejuvenating northern Sweden with the industrial projects you mentioned, which are quite exciting. Whether they will succeed, however, is another story. I don't know whether the supply of electricity will be sufficient to actually make all these giant experiments work. So here is another challenge for Sweden to continue to move in a green direction and to be a leading force when it comes to fossil-free steel, battery production, etc. We have to rapidly build up the grid system and the production of electricity, which is a huge challenge.
One thing that in my young years, I worked in a bookshop, and I remember a book that came that was very, very popular that everyone bought. It's called Our Economy, or Vår Ekonomi. I think it's probably the most read and sold book in economy in Sweden today. I looked up in a bookshop now, and right now it's the 14th edition of this book.
Actually, the 15th.
Oh. 15th.
I am writing the 16th edition right now.
Coming out next year. Okay, fantastic. How does it feel to be such a great educator, people's educator? I mean, that's such an important thing, and to know that so many people have read your book.
I thrive on being a pedagogue. I always have been since teaching at the university. And the greatest kicks I get is when people come up to me and say, oh, I read your textbook and that really helped me understand how the world works, et cetera, et cetera. The flip side of that is sometimes it makes me feel very old. You know, you see an old, frail man with white hair and a cane stumbles up to you and said, I read your book. Then I realize I'm even older.
Probably some young person will come to you too. So
yeah, hopefully.
Makes it wide. I thought about that because economy, myself, I'm not a very good economist. I think it's difficult to understand. But you're known for this, for being very pedagogical. And I think that's, do you think that's a key factor to explain economy?
I think economists have too much have had their own language.
Yes.
They're sort of talking to each other and presuming that everybody else understands, or if they don't understand, perhaps it's even better because then you feel even more, you know, up in the clouds. But I'm not very good at math. So when I studied, I realized I had to sort of break down explanations into several basic steps to hang on myself. And later on, when I taught and when I've written books, I've sort of tried to use that same method. You know, firstly, secondly, thirdly, blah, blah, blah. It could be a little bit boring reading sometimes, but it seems to help to actually try to help the reader step by step. Rather than assuming that he or she already knows all the fancy words and terminology.
So I want to ask you if I can do something. When I was on your website, I knew this would be quite an interesting conversation because you have listed all of these quotations over the years. And I found a few that I would like to read to you. And
this is getting scary now.
Hear you comment on. Okay, first one. This was from Svenska Dagbladet in 1994. The ancient Greeks had Pythia in Delphi, who sat in caves and mused in a narcotic cloud over the future. The Middle Ages had their astrologers. In the late 20th century, Sweden has Claes Eklund.
Well, that's pretty nice, isn't it? I'm the one who sort of interprets and explains where the world is heading.
Yeah.
Pedagogues.
Okay, the next one is the 1990s program is Claes Eklund's Midlife Crisis. What does this mean?
This was
by Carl Bildt in 1990.
The Social Democratic Party and the labor union set up a futures commission. You know, once again, let's go back to what we discussed previously. The Swedish model was in crisis. You had to rethink what are we going to do next. And so there was this big undertaking of writing the program for the future. And it was quite sort of self-critical, saying to the Social Democrats, we were great in the past, but we have problems. What are we going to do next? And that I was the secretary of that group. And it happened to coincide with, in my case, I left my work. There was a government crisis. I left the Minister of Finance. And I also went through a horrible divorce. And Carl Bildt, who was then the leader of the Conservative Party, he made fun of that. So that was his claim. The program was my midlife crisis. My crisis wasn't visible in the program, but it was his way of sort of making fun of it.
Okay, last one comes from Amelia, a women's magazine in March 2002. It's two words, tough cuddly.
Tough cuddly? That's not bad, is it?
No.
I think both men and women would like to be tough cuddly.
<It's nice. laughs> I think it's cute.
Yes.
If you could give one or two advices to newly arrived international people who come to Stockholm or Sweden, what would that be and why should they stay here? Because we want them to stay here.
Well, that's a tough one. I think it is important to try to understand some of the Swedish peculiarities that we've discussed here. On the one hand, the sort of the traditions of Sweden being the moral and economic superpower and why we're not. That has created some phantom pains among some Swedes, but it also creates opportunities. I mean, we are now sort of facing an unknown future with this in our past, but we're also a very modern country who can experiment. And this for someone who has a degree or special competences and come here as an expat, that is an excellent opportunity. You should embrace it and really sort of try to understand why this is such a great platform for you. Second advice is probably that you should, as soon as possible, try to get some good Swedish friends who can tell you what the pitfalls are and what you should avoid talking about and how you should sort of behave in a Swedish social cultural context. Swedes are these days quite open. Many have traveled. Most people speak very good English. But still, there are some sort of, once again, peculiarities that you should study and be beware of.
Yes, true.
Great tips. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you, Klaus.
Thank you. I'm so happy having been called Tough Cuddly. That was a long time ago.
I didn't mention, too, this is you were listed in the top 10 of Sweden's most modern men, and this was their descriptor. Ah. So that's the context.
That's a really good list to be on, isn't it?
Well, my sons actually are on many lists. They live in the US and they're quite successful in different ways. And one of them was once listed on as being the most handsome man in Sweden. But his younger brother and I felt that was very unfair to us. So.
Still family. Mm. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we learned a lot about Swedish economy and changed some perspectives. And what stands out to you, Maria?
Well, it stands first, I think, Klaus himself. I mean, so many years of experience and he has been everywhere in society. I think that's so interesting with an economist who have seen everything from politics to family economy and also for the future, not for industry and academia. And that's so, I just want to learn more.
Yeah. It was almost hard to ask questions because of all the different directions
we could have gone. It's true. Yeah. Which angle should you choose? Because he has been like everywhere.
Yeah. One thing I want to look up more is sort of the transition from what I've learned as the Swedish model to better understanding what that looks like in practice today.
Yes.
And also sort of the future direction of what that can look like in 15, 20, 50 years.
Yeah, kind of like maybe a new Swedish model. We all need to think about that and not always think about how it has been and wish and long for it to come back, because it won't. It's new times now. And I think that was the message he really came up with today, that so many things have happened, but also many things are actually history.
Right.
Still, we talk about them, but it's actually history. We are somewhere else now.
Yeah.
That's a very important insight, I think.
Which is an interesting dynamic in Sweden, since there is sort of a narrative of what it has been, but also it's such a trends, new technology-driven society. So it will be interesting to see how those two things go together going forward.
Yes, that really opened my eyes, actually. And from someone who has been with... so experienced, have seen it all. I think it's encouraging, hopefully a great future in front of us.
Yeah. And we also learned that tough cuddly is the thing to be if you want to make a top 10 most modern man in Sweden list.
I will try to be that too.
Well, great. Thanks for listening today, and make sure to follow along if you'd like to hear about the upcoming episodes.
And this podcast is produced by Stockholm's Akademiska Forum.
Stockholm is a state of mind. Hey, Stockholm.